earlier you were talking about your elbow bend being able to get underneath the ball more and creating more rev rate. What is the best drill to help a bowler learn to do that?
There's a lot of them. It's really a hard concept, you know? A lot of people have developed an elbow bend, especially men, because it came naturally. They were trying to figure out a way how to get more rev rate. And for some reason, men were able to figure it out a lot easier and earlier in their bowling life than women. And I do believe that there is a stigma around women that we can or cannot do things certain way, that women are being coached different than men. And I'm trying to kill that stigma. I've been preaching it for many years now, that women can if they want to. They don't have to. We have the best women in the world who are straighter players, bowling with the glove. They win titles. They're phenomenal. A lot of people are not going to reach the level of success that they do. But what I'm trying to tell everyone, you can be whoever you want to be. You can try to be coached or to train to where you want to bring your game. So a lot of men have figured out the way of how to do it without having someone break down, like you have to do this and this and that. It just came naturally. So you have a lot of people that have been bowling for a year or two, and they have a lot of rev rate. I'm not saying it's created the right way, but they have a lot of rev rate. Some people that have bowled for many, many years, and then they're trying to gain more rev rate, learning the elbow bend and the timing of it, it's really hard, okay? Mm-hmm. It's something that does not come easy. Your scores are going to drastically drop because your accuracy is going to be all over the place. The ball speed is going to drop. But for those who really want it, it's really worth it. There is many drills you can do, like starting with a foul and release or throwing the ball onto the floor. It's very hard to explain it verbally, but I have posted some of them on my YouTube or some of them on my social media. But actually, I have also developed something that I call Power Academy. It's an online bowling course where I have uploaded over 5.5 hours of in-depth explanation of the power game. I have gone through all the drills, practice sessions, how someone can achieve it. I have over 600 members, which is really cool.
Very cool. People
that are learning how to do it. I created that because I have seen that bowling is lacking straightforward explanations why things are happening or things are not happening. Like having rev rate, it's not caused by cupping your wrist. Okay. We have to get this out of the way once and for all. It's also not just caused for keeping your fingers stiff and lifting the ball with your fingers. For me, release starts in a downswing. So when someone talks about the release, I know we're talking about when that ball leaves the hand. Mm-hmm. But to me, if you're working on the release, it starts on the moment when the ball is coming from the downswing, and that's when the elbow bend happens, and it unbends at the moment of the pure release. When you are by your ankle, the elbow unbends, unloads. That's when we turn our hand to create more or less axis. So the release on its own, it's not just when the ball is by your ankle and you're about to release it. If you're working on the rev and power game, for me, and just for me, the release starts in the downswing. Because if we're going to work on your release and having you create more power, more rev rate, we're going to focus more on your downswing than we're going to focus on the release on its own.
You talked about social media, that you've got some videos on there. And I think that's a great segue to the fact that, as far as I know, you have more Instagram followers than any professional bowler, male or female, out there. And I was wondering if you could share to anyone who's trying to build their social media following, what has worked for you?
Well, I think I started very early because I started to, I opened my Facebook page, athlete page in 2017. And, you know, 2017 doesn't seem that far away, but it had been 6 years and social media had came long ways in 6 years. And I remember when I was like talking to my friends, being like, hey, I think I'm going to open like my Facebook page. I never called it a fan page. I don't like calling it a fan page. It's just a page that I share my drills, my practice, my everything, my tournaments, everything connected with bowling. So I opened it and I remember like the looks I was getting when I was creating the videos at first. I was being called an influencer. I was kind of making fun of by just putting myself out there. It quickly stopped after I won my first title months later, and you know, people were gaining more. I was gaining more and more engagement on my pages, but that's back when social media was not really a big thing for bowlers. So I think just being transparent with a lot of people about how I feel about certain things. And just posting stuff that it might be very vulnerable to many, and sharing my journey and my struggles, I think it helps other people to resonate with me. See me as a person, see me as a human, not a robot. My pages are not there to be a marketing platform, to market everything that, you know, I'm there to market, like 900 global bowling balls, because I'm with them. I'm sure. With them because I love the equipment. I've chosen to be with them, you know. Every sponsor I'm with, I'm choosing to be with them. I'm going to market them. But my platforms are not for that. My platforms are to spread awareness for bowling, to teach those who need some tips, to connect with people that feel about bowling the same way I feel about bowling. And quickly later, I opened my Instagram. I started posting a lot more. Instagram was not as popularized as Facebook back in 2017. And I think my Instagram had really blew up in 2020 and 2021 when they introduced the Reels. And that's when I started working with the videographer. We're doing really nice, high-quality videos that were very appealing to people that were not even bowlers, you know, like when you see a girl throwing a long reverie and big back thing, and it's appealing. It's something that they're like, oh my God, that can be done. Like, yeah, if you don't, if you're not a bowler, you sometimes don't even realize that you can spin the ball. So I think I got a lot of people coming in from outside the bowling industry that decided to had follow me because of the quality of the videos I was pushing on my social media. And that's when I managed to get to the following I have today.
Very cool. I do video production for a living, so I always admired the lighting in those videos. I really, really liked that.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. It's a lot of work, to be fair, but
it is. It is. People don't realize how much work it takes to make a video look really good, and a lot of it is lighting.
Yeah, and my purpose is, like, you know, to spread awareness to bowling and to connect with bowlers, but also I would like bowling to get outside of the frames of where we are locked in so much. Like, bowling is just bowlers. I want bowling to be seen by other people, and social media had allowed us to have bowling been seen by people that have never maybe bowled in their life, or they had been, but just for fun, you know, birthday party.
Sure.
I want them to see what it's really like, because maybe it's going to spark some interest, attention. Mm-hmm. The more sparks I get, the more bowlers I can get coming to our sport. And I think that's something that we as a community of bowlers have realized some time ago, that the more we post about it, that the more we talk about it, the more people might get that interest in bowling and join us, and our community is going to keep growing and growing, and bowling eventually will keep growing as a sport.
Where would you like to see bowling go?
Everywhere. I want it to be the best and biggest, you know, sport in the world. Yeah. I don't think that's ever going to happen. Because bowling is a tough sport to understand for a lot of people, just taking a bowling ball and knocking 10 pins. Like, I think it was so big back in the day because you had one bowling ball, the task was easy, knock down the ball, the pins, people understood it. Now that technology is going and it's becoming so advanced, we change balls all the time, so we draw them different ways to get as much as advantage as we possibly can. I think this part of bowling is not very understood, and because of that, it's harder to watch. You know, like some of the most popular sports that people like to follow are very easy to understand what's the purpose of it. We understand purpose of bowling, but for some, it's like, that's so boring. It's just like the same thing over and over again, because a lot of people don't realize that we are facing invisible environments, and there's different covers on the bowling ball. One ball is going to hook a lot more, one is going to hook less. We have to figure out which one is going to be the one that's going to strike more than the other. It's a lot of physics in it, a lot of chemistry for people that build bowling balls.
Right.
So this is the part that it's not very well known, and I think that makes bowling not very appealing for people that are not bowlers. So figuring out the way of how to make it more appealing for those who don't bowl, it's a big struggle for our community, for our industry overall. It's like, how do we get more bowlers? How do we choose how do we get parents to choose bowling as a sport for their kids?
Right.
Because why would you choose bowling if you can choose football, soccer, volleyball, anything that you want? Like, why would you choose bowling? And it starts with rewiring people's brain and get different image of bowling than what people already have when they think of bowling, killing the stigma about our sport, just changing it. And that lays in the hands of bowlers, and that also lays in the hands of organizations. They have to be the ones pressing bowlers to do things a certain way, so that way we can change the image of our game, so slowly but steadily towards what we want it to be.
I like it. In 2017, you were Rookie of the Year. What advice would you give Hope Gramley, who just won Rookie of the Year this past season?
I think it's very hard to give someone an advice, someone who is as talented as she is and bowler that is already on the PWBA tour. I would just give her an advice not to get her success, get in her head, because it's easy to get expectations really high. It's very easy to come into the next bowling tournament and PWBA stop and being like, oh, I'm going to make the show. Like, I think I'm going to make the show. And you stop cherishing those moments where you make the first cut, when you make the second cut. Mm-hmm. You are kind of like your expectations are overblurring all the other struggles that you have fought and you came on top and you stopped really giving yourself a tap on the shoulder and being like, hey, great job. It's because your expectations are so far there that you forget to like really pat yourself on the shoulder for the little victories that take you all the way to where you want to get. So I would just tell her to like cherish every moment and always when she's struggling or not, when she has success, to always give herself a credit for where she came from, what she did. And I'm feeling like she's doing great so far.
Absolutely. What's your favorite 900 global ball at the moment?
Reality.
Okay.
Hands down, Reality, I think, is the best big asymmetrical ball ever made in the history. And you can quote me on that. I really don't think there is a better big asymmetrical ball on the market that is better than Reality.
The Reality has an asymmetrical core along with a newer release like the Eternity. But then you've got the Zen that's symmetrical. For those who might be considering their next piece of equipment, could you explain how those two different cores react on the lanes?
So, for those who don't know, the asymmetrical cores are going to be the ones that they go, and then once they see the friction, they flip. The core flips, and it kind of goes forward, okay? So you can say that those ASINs give you the sharp hook, but many times the sharp hook is finished off with the raw face. Sometimes it's too long for some. Sometimes it causes you to leave a lot of flat tendons, depending on what angles you want. But that's what the asymmetrical core does for that ball. Yeah, it flips, and then it flips really sharply, and then it rolls. The symmetrical balls, of course, depending on how the core is built and what the ball is meant to do, they're going to have a smoother transition because they don't have a core that is asymmetric that's going to flip when it sees the dry. So it's going to feel the transition a lot smoother, be rounder. And because of that energy that it's like wasting very slowly because it's not flipping that drastically like an ASIN core, it's going to have more continuous motion in the pins. So that is the difference between ASIM and symmetrical ball. I don't know if we can say that Zen and Eternity fall into those categories, as I say, because Zen has rather a forward core. So the Zen ball likes to roll forward in the back, even though it's a symmetrical ball. So they might be a lot closer to each other than any difference to one ASIM and one symmetrical ball you would give me as an example.
Okay. Would you recommend or would you ever use an ASIM on a short pattern?
Yeah, I would definitely think that everybody has different preferences. So for me, I tend to like pin down layouts a lot more on the asymmetrical balls than I like on the symmetrical balls. For some reason, the ASIMs with the pin-up layouts don't look nearly as good as they do with the pin-down layouts. So I definitely would say that it's a good ball for short pattern, but it depends. You know, it depends if you are playing straighter and fast and by the gutter, or you're hooking the whole lane, because the way that the short patterns progress is that we want to be as close to the gutter as we can, if we can, and play straighter. But once it opens up and you move left, then you want to really create a lot of angle for the ball to burn up and really feed off that friction and burn up and just roll to the pocket. So all the big balls that can do that, get to the spot, hook, and then really burn up, giving you the control in the back, are the balls I would suggest for shorter patterns. Not necessarily saying that symmetric is going to be better than asymmetric.
Cool. A couple more questions. Who or what has had the biggest influence on your life and bowling career?
I think it's my dad. My dad has always been a strong figure in my family. My parents had my sister when they were very young. So my mom was a housewife from a very young age. And my dad was the one that had to care for the family financially. And, you know, Poland used to be a communistic country. It was very tough back then. My family came from almost zero, like a lot of families in Poland at the time. We didn't have much money. So that was the one that had to provide for everyone. And he was the one that was able to get me to the US. And the funny story is that, as I told you, since I met with Alan, telling me about Kegel and Weber, I was like, okay, I'm going. Like, on my, in my mind, I already knew. Through the whole high school, anybody else, he's like, yeah, I'm going to study in the States. But from saying that to actually taking action to, like, fill up the paperwork, to research for it, it's very hard. It gives you a lot of anxiety. And I remember that I graduated high school, I got my diploma, and there was the time when in Poland you had a little bit more time to file documents and everything for your college. In the US, it starts a month earlier, and I knew I had to start doing work to, you know, to be in time. And then I told my dad, like, Dad, you know what? I think I'm going to have my few months off, and I'm going to join the college in January instead of, no more, I think it's September in the US. I don't remember. It's been a while. And I remember he said, and he like, either you go now or you don't go at all. And that was, it felt like a slap in the face. It was not nearly that, but I was so prepared to be like, okay, I'm just going to go later. You know, and in my head, I was already having a plan that, oh, I'm going to take it easy and I'm going to go later. But he's like, no, either you go now or you don't go. And I think it's because he knew that if I was going to settle in Poland after high school, like trying to figure stuff out, it would be even harder for me to take those first steps. So he is the reason why I filled up all my paperwork. Work. Everything was last minute. I legit picked up my visa to the US the same day I was taking a flight to the US, which is something that, you know, they told me I was the last student to be admission to the school for that semester. I was the last one to join the team. I was the last one in all of that because I was waiting for so long. I was so afraid to take first steps, but he was the one that, like, kind of pushed me and, like, you know, whatever. And I really knew that I really wanted it, so I didn't really have a choice. So I would say he is the figure that has helped me shape my life and helped me to get where I am.
How would your close friends and family describe you?
I think that I would say that I'm very empathetic and that I have a lot of energy, that I have a lot of ideas, that I'm very caring, that I lose things all the time, that I'm often late, and that I have an ease communicating with others. That's what I would think they would say. I hope so. Maybe they're going to say, I don't know. It's terrible, you know?
Last question. What is a question that I should have asked you today or that you wish other people would ask you in interviews like this?
Well, I don't think there is a question that you have not asked that I wish you did. I feel like our conversation had a flow to where, from one question, I could tell you more of a background story explaining you who I am, what I do, and why I do what I do. So I don't think there's anything that you had missed out. But I'm super open to people that are going to listen to that podcast to give you some feedback about, like, hey, I wish you asked that. Yeah, that.
Sure.
I would be very happy to answer the questions that we had possibly missed.
Is there anything you'd like to promote before we end our conversation? Obviously, you talked about the Power Academy. Anything, Patreon, anything like that?
Yeah, I want to promote bowling. Guys, go bowl. Just go bowl. It's such an amazing sport. My parents are 60. My uncles are also 60. We all go bowling when I'm home. I love it. I don't understand why people don't bowl more. It's a sport that stays with you all your life. You can barely be able to walk, but as long as you can lift the ball and throw a shot, you will always have a community you can fall back on. Whenever you change states or countries, you are going to be able to find bowlers. And bowlers are really cool. They take everybody with open hands. But if you're a new place, bowling is going to be something that's going to be a cushion for you to fall out onto. It can be a way of life like it is for you, but it doesn't have to be. There is so much to bowling that I wish people would understand. So, yeah, I would like to promote bowling.
Well, I absolutely have enjoyed talking to you, and I love your passion and love for bowling. And it's really exciting to talk to other people who are so passionate about bowling. So thank you so much for your time. And hopefully we'll get to talk again soon.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me again. I hope I'm going to go back to your podcast maybe in some time. And hopefully when I'm back in your studio, I'm going to be like talking about my next title I win.
Absolutely.
That's a very big dream of mine. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Daria.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Join us next time on The Bowler's Mind.